quantum for me is AI on steroids, because what it is doing is removing time. Because we're now able to, in a quantum environment, once we get there, and we're not there yet, but once we get there, we are able to process information in a fraction of the time. Now, why is that important from a security standpoint? Because always, in security, you're trying to build in time to respond.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today's episode is the second part of journalist Nick Witchell's interview with Steve. As organizations become increasingly data-driven, technologies like artificial intelligence and quantum computing will have a huge impact on data security. Today, Steve talks with Nick about how security professionals can help their organizations adopt these technologies safely and smartly.
Steve, I'd like to focus on economics and the future outlook for economic growth. Now, how do you think we can achieve growth that is not just measured by the old metric of quantity, but the new metric of quality?
That's a really tricky one, isn't it? I mean, I think that as we evolve, it's still going to be the combination of the two for a little while yet. But what we are seeing is a pretty rapid shift to organizations beginning to understand the value of the data that they hold and what they can actually do with that. So there is a lot of talk about, you know, data being the new oil, for instance. So an organization that is in control of a significant amount of information is able to use that in terms of the way that they then develop, in terms of the way that they drive their business growth. So I think that's one really important evolutionary change that we're seeing in the world of business. And I'm not aware, actually, of any particular organization that isn't impacted by that. I think if you're in mining or if you're in financial services, right the way across the board. So that is bringing about quite a significant shift in boardrooms and with senior leaders. We're seeing that manifesting in a move towards things like predictive analytics, the use of things like artificial intelligence, where data is becoming used to drive decisions, perhaps not as well as it might yet, because it's still relatively early days, but it's a pretty much relentless development, I think. And it's causing some challenges, because of course it's changing the world of work. You know, we're seeing a move away from industries that are being, you know, heavily resource intensive to those that perhaps don't quite need as many. We're seeing a move towards having a need for people who are very much more aware of the way in which technology can be used, how it might be used to resolve certain issues and indeed create opportunities. And governments are going to have to come to terms with that, both in terms of societal impact, but also just in terms of things like taxation on corporations. You know, so how do you create the right business environment to operate?
And then, of course, as there always is, there's geopolitics, particularly a matter of concern at the moment. Now, how do you think geopolitical conflicts are driving trade policy?
I think that the situation in the Ukraine, in particular, was a huge wake-up call for a lot of organizations and a lot of individuals. I think very few people actually understood the way in which complex supply chains today actually operate. And so we do take things for granted, don't we? We assume that we're going to be able to walk into a supermarket and just pick whatever we like off the shelf. It's a very simple example, but supply chains were disrupted in that way. Then if you move into the whole world of technology, of the way in which businesses operate, just the reconfiguration of where supplies were going to come from, chips, for instance, to power everything from mobile phones through to cars, were impacted. I don't think we fully understood the mineral resources that we were taking out of the Ukraine, for instance. And so when I look at that particular conflict, For me, that really is a very significant watershed moment for a lot of organizations who suddenly had to step back and really understand where their exposures lie, not just financially, but also from the people aspect too. So that's probably one of the most significant things I think we've seen over the last few years.
I'd like to turn to two other areas which are transformative and which are going to have increasingly important influences on all our lives. First of all, quantum computing. Now, I'm not sure that any of us fully understand it, but how, in your view, is quantum computing going to transform the economy, industry, etc.?
Yeah, quantum is, I think back to some of the work at the ISF that we do. So I think back to our Threat Horizon reports, and we were talking about quantum some years ago in much the same way as we've been talking about artificial intelligence for some while as well. And so quantum, if you look at the change that's being brought about with things like artificial intelligence, then quantum for me is AI on steroids, because what it is doing is removing time. Because we're now able to, in a quantum environment, once we get there, and we're not there yet, but once we get there, we are able to process information in a fraction of the time. Now, why is that important from a security standpoint? Because always, in security, you're trying to build in time to respond. If you are reducing it from even 10 seconds down to one, that's a significant change. And we're talking about reducing it even further than that in the quantum computing world. So that's hugely important from an implications for security and how we need to adapt our systems, how we need to make use of things like artificial intelligence in order to help us on that journey. The other piece about quantum that, again, we need to address, and I'm not entirely certain that we are at the moment, is the environmental impact. Quantum computing requires immense computing power. Immense computing power requires a huge amount of electricity and generates a huge amount of heat. So if you think about all of those things in the environmental context, we really do need to figure out how we're going to exist in a world where global warming is a reality, where we are really driving as hard as we can in pursuit of different technological answers. And yet we can't actually divorce that entirely from the laws of nature and the impact that we have on it. So again, at a very sort of high level, we need to be considering those issues. And for me, that's not necessarily within the gift of individual organizations.
And are we considering this environmental aspect of it all? You know, quantum computing is held up as the sort of the holy grail, and we must have it, we must get there as soon as we can. But is proper consideration being given to these implications, do you think?
I'm not entirely certain that it is. And the reason I say that is that I don't think people fully understand it. I think it's very easy for us to look, for instance, at transitioning away from fossil fuels, because we could understand that. You know, we can see a wind farm, we can look at a solar farm, we can understand some of the implications, and we might be persuaded that it's a good thing. We're oblivious somewhat to what goes into making a phone. We don't understand necessarily where all of the different components come from. We don't necessarily think about the fact that some of those components are in very, very short supply. We just want the phone, and we want the phone to work. And so quantum is a number of steps beyond that, if you like. And so I do think that we need to take a bit of a step back before we go forwards to really sort of figure out how all of this is going to work.
Explore ISF resources on what impact the nature and stability of international relationships will have on your organization. Explore securityforum.org for Threat Horizon 2025, scenarios for an uncertain future, as well as our report on securing the supply chain during periods of instability. We'll link to both of these resources in the show notes. And you can always explore all our research, podcast episodes, and more at securityforum.org. Now, back to Steve's conversation with Nick Witchell.
You've already indicated the close association between quantum computing and artificial intelligence, close cousins or whatever. Mm-hmm. So what do you think does a modern 21st century AI economy start to look like?
Yeah. Well, we're starting to see some of those. I mean, I think the first thing I would say, Nick, is that, you know, AI or machine learning isn't actually new. You know, it's been around for very many years. What we're now starting to see is what I would term the commercialization of it. So it had been sort of restricted to labs and that kind of thing. But now we're starting to see it really coming to the fore. And of course, ChatGPT is the example that everybody picks up and uses. But there are other elements of it as well. So if that's the direction we're headed in, what does, to answer your question, the world look like when we become so dependent upon it? And there's some good examples where we're building things around the world of how we can get AI to work effectively. So if we look at some of the smart city developments, for instance, heavily dependent upon artificial intelligence to function effectively, anticipating before decisions are made, anticipating simple things like, you know, the need for lifts, the need for trains, and so on, which of course comes back to also helping us when we think about some of those environmental issues. But we also need to consider it from, again, back in the security world, from the perspective of the data. Because artificial intelligence and artificial intelligence systems are only ever as good as the data that they are working off. So those old traditional elements of security, you know, confidentiality, integrity, availability. The key one for me, and I've said this for a number of years, is the integrity of the data. My biggest concern, the biggest threat that I see, is data that has been tampered with. Because you or I may look at something and think that doesn't look quite right, so we'll dig into it. A machine doesn't necessarily do that. It's trusting the data and then it's spitting out information for us upon which we then go and act, or worse still, that the machine then goes and acts upon. So from a security standpoint, integrity of data suddenly is taking on, for me anyway, a much, much bigger importance in the way in which we actually use some of these systems.
And from a purely cybersecurity point of view, can there be any hope that quantum or AI will give a decisive advantage to cybersecurity? Or is it just something that, you know, the bad guys will be hot on the heels of it and will be turning it to their disreputable malicious advantage as well?
Well, I think sadly, what's available to the good guys is always going to be available to the bad guys. And the bad guys, as you and I have talked about over the years, you know, are not as encumbered, perhaps, as the good guys are by the rate of adoption, the funding they can put into it. And I think we've reached that point where it's fairly well understood now that malicious actors are very well funded, are very well structured, are hugely cooperative, and do have access to all of the technologies that we've just been talking about. So there is going to be, I think, for a number of years to come, this almost game of cat and mouse, if you like, between malicious actors and the good guys. But I think that from the good guy perspective, our ability to use some of the tools we've been talking about is going to help significantly in combating some of those threats. But the real answer is not to be overly reliant on just one element of it. So for me, the real answer is how do we get people to work effectively with artificial intelligence or in a quantum environment so that we get the best from the machines and the best from the people. That is the real holy grail, if you like, that we have to pursue from a security standpoint.
Let's look at the world of work and the implications of all of this for that. Do you feel that we are being honest with people about the number of them who will be displaced by quantum and AI and so on?
I don't know that we are. And I think the answer is not because anyone wants to deliberately mislead. I think it's that people just honestly don't know. We're making guesses. I think if we look back, then over the way in which technology has evolved over the years, then what it has done is create different jobs. So certainly some of the jobs that will be created don't exist today. Some of the jobs that exist today will most certainly not exist tomorrow. So the issue then from a societal standpoint is how do we manage that transition? How do we better equip our children to deal with a future over which we have not a huge amount of control at the moment because we simply don't know what it's going to look like because the whole space is changing so very, very rapidly. So that means we have to equip them with better skills when it comes to agility, flexibility, thinking, play, all of those sorts of things so that actually they're more adaptable. And I think if you look at some of the younger generations entering the workplace, we're seeing some of that anyway at the moment. There isn't anybody who these days who enters a role in the main anyway with the intention of staying there for life. Those days are long gone. It's much more around that sort of short, sharp 18-month, 2-year, perhaps 3 years at most, gain experience, move on to the next, constantly begin to try out different things. I think that's the way that the world of work will change. But certainly I would like to see much more government focus on the societal impacts of some of these things, the societal impacts of technology, the ways in which we need to better equip people to respond to that. Because, you know, if we can't do that, then we really are building some pretty big problems for ourselves to have to deal with. And that's never a good place to be.
Let's look at government activity or perhaps inactivity in terms of regulation and legislation. Do you think that, broadly speaking, it is keeping pace with these changing technologies?
It's a very difficult space. Governments work in a certain way. Regulators have always been, traditionally anyway, they're getting better, but traditionally have been somewhat reluctant to bring in some form of regulation, legislation, in case they get it wrong, because then they'll have to change it and go through this huge process to get that done. My concern is that we are seeing more and more regulation coming about. And that is increasing the burden on business. So some of that obviously is important to have. GDPR, we saw that coming in. We've got the EU AI Act. We've got things like NIS2. We've got DORA. And that's just across Europe. Then if we move to the UK, we have different variations on all of those. If you go to the United States, it's even worse because you've got state-based variations. If you're a business trying to do your best across some of those geographies, good luck, because you're never going to be able to keep up with what's going on. And I think there is that sort of reality check that we need to see coming into it. The answer, of course, is not easy, because the answer is collaboration at a government level. And we know how difficult that is. But that, for me, is the way that it needs to go. But I am concerned with the focus much more on compliance, that the burden on directors in particular is becoming so much greater, particularly as you move down to the smaller enterprises, because they simply don't have either the ability in some instances or the time and resource to be able to effectively respond to some of that. And that's putting them at risk. And if they're in a large organization supply chain, of course, that will have a ripple through effect.
So how do governments, how do companies, how do we all go about creating an environment that ensures AI is a force for good?
I think it's about listening. It's about not being afraid to change. It's about taking inputs from a variety of different sectors. And all of those things, I would say, government is particularly bad at. Because governments, the majority anyway, tend to be politically motivated. And that's the real challenge. So I think we are going to see, potentially, I hope, is the setting up of much more independent think tanks. Yes, that are government-sponsored, but are there as independently as they can be to provide support back to governments to give them some of the insights that they're not going to get coming at it from a politically motivated perspective.
So once again, we come back to these key words, these key themes of collaboration and support. And that, of course, is an area where ISF can be supportive.
It does. And I think that we've demonstrated that over the years through our involvement with things like standards bodies. We're very active, as you know, with people like ISO, with NIST in the United States, across the European Union, with input into things like GDPR. And it isn't just ISF Limited that's doing that. It's the member communities that we interact with all around the world. You know, we have members in almost 50 countries. Over half of our membership are some of the world's leading organizations. So I say that because the expertise is there. It is available. We just need to open the door for it to be used.
Tap into it.
Absolutely.
Steve, thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Nick.
If you found value in the conversation today between Nick Witchell and Steve Durbin, please give us a 5-star rating and share this episode. Get in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or linkedin.com/in/Steve Durbin. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. And become an ISF member today. Don't miss the ISF Insight Analyst podcast, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert, with senior producer Katie Flood. Additional support from Mandy Morish, Oscar Falk, and Brian Wilson. Music by Alexander Filipiak. Mix and master by Kayla Elrod. Thanks for listening.